Okay, I'm all in.
This is the only poker show in St. Louis radio.
I wanna hold them like they do in Texas, please.
With the only St. Louisan to make it to the final table of the 2008 World Series of Poker main event.
Shuffle up a deal.
This is the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Live in the poker room of the Lumiere Place Hotel and Casino right here in downtown St. Louis, right along I-70. And frankly, Dennis, I am shocked to find out there has not been an increase in accidents on I-70 ever since Lumiere Place put our pictures up on the giant animated sign out front.
Yes, but we've been free entertainment. Everybody gets to look and laugh. Come on now, you know, what the heck?
I've had a lot of people in the last week say, how did you convince them to do that? And how long will it be before they take you down? Welcome to the show. We're happy to have you along. We also want to welcome some new sponsors to the show tonight, American Image Spa and Salon and Show Me's Restaurant and Bill Hyatt, the Glove Guy. Welcome as sponsors of the Lumiere Place Final Table. I'm Paul Harris. He's Dennis Phillips, and he's back from a big Poker Stars event in Monte Carlo, Monaco, called the EPT Grand Finale.
I haven't got toothpicks in my eyes to keep them open after the flight back here and everything, but I am back. And Monte Carlo doesn't have its equal anywhere in the world, I don't think. I've never been there before. It is phenomenal.
I've always wanted to go.
It's
basically say thanks to James Bond.
Well, there you go, yeah.
But we were talking.
And I played in the casino where they shot it at.
In that same casino?
The same casino with the big roof. It was just unbelievable. I left there a little poorer than when I went in, but what the heck, it was worth it.
Okay.
So
you didn't play Baccarat, though, like
no,
he
I
does.
No, I did not.
No.
I played some blackjack.
So we talked to you live from Monte Carlo last week. Bring us up to date on how things have gone since day 1A of the grand final.
Well, I made it till about 10 minutes left in day 2. I got knocked out of it. There were about 960 starting. We got down to about 140 players, and that's when I went out.
Mm-hmm.
One of the last four or five hands of day 2 knocked me out on it. Yeah, it was a little disgusting. It was one of those river ones, which never, ever happens to any other poker player.
Yeah, but, right.
You know,
yeah.
Whatever. I guess the 30-second synopsis of it, mid-position, had a queen-jack, went ahead and made a 3X raise on it, went all the way around to the big blind. Everybody else had folded. He smooth-called, flopped a queen-7-5, so I've got top pair. He checked. I made a substantial bet, probably at least 80% of the pot out there to try and just go ahead and take it down. And he smooth called me again. Six comes on the turn, and he shoved. And I had a good enough read on this guy. I didn't even hesitate because it did not make sense. You're looking at a little over 30,000 in the pot. He's shoving for 102,000 more. I haven't covered, but not by a whole lot. I couldn't think of any two cards hardly that he would have, unless he happened to have, you know, I guess
king queen.
Possibly. I wouldn't think so.
You didn't read him as strong?
Absolutely not. Didn't at all.
Mm-hmm.
So I insta-called. He looked at me and just wilted in his chair, and I went, yes. All right, he's on his heart draw because I think there were two hearts out there. He's on some draw, so I'm great.
Yeah.
No problem at all. I turned over my queens. He turned over pocket eights.
So you got him crushed?
No. I was dead from the get-go because an eight comes on the river. Right there.
Classic.
Goodbye.
Classic.
Yeah. Put me down to about 30,000. I hung around for a couple more hands, and I got nines. Guy behind me, jacks.
Mm-hmm.
End of story. I'm out.
Tell me about being in Monte Carlo, not just being in the casino, but since I've never been there, I know it's this beautiful city on the hillside of Monaco.
Yes, it is.
Did you get to walk around and see any part of it?
I actually did. I did a little more exploring there than I normally do. I actually left the casino and actually walked around.
Good for you. I'm
it
proud of you.
Well, when we're driving there from the taxi, you can see all the signs over the street about the Grand Prix that's coming, and I had to go up and see the hairpin turns and all of that, and I walked up there and did it. The first day I got there last Monday, it was rainy and cold and nasty, and I'm going, this could be a long week.
Yeah.
Next day it cleared up, and the rest of the week the weather was perfect, absolutely perfect. So on Tuesday I went ahead, turned out, the casino's to the right next door to the hotel. I'm going to go to the left, and I'm going to just see what's out here. I walked two blocks. In that two blocks, I passed a Rolls-Royce dealership, inside, beautiful cars, a Bentley dealership. Again, inside, on display, spaced out, not jammed in like the ones are here, but nice luxury type, say.
Mm-hmm.
A Ferrari dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going, this is unbelievable. And then I got to the Lamborghini dealership.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow. I mean, you just know you're in Monaco when you're just walking down the street. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
Well, unbelievable.
That's the image that place has, you know. Really fitting. Upscale.
Yep.
Really fancy.
Yep.
Really attractive women, I'm guessing.
Oh, wow. never mind. I'm just thinking back, I'm just going, wow.
All right, take us back inside now, because
okay.
I got to ask you something that I read online, and I don't know if this is true or not. You were there. You can tell me.
Okay.
In the €10,000 main event, which you played in, which you just told us you busted out on day two.
Right.
It's my understanding that the guy who won it, you know, you always hear a chip and a chair. As long as you're in the tournament, if you have one chip and a chair, you're still in that tournament, and anybody can win it, and you can do it from there.
That's true.
I heard that a guy was really, really low on chips and turned it around and won this thing.
Down to 7 players out of the 960. There's one gentleman with just a little bit over 2 big blinds. That's it. In other words, the next big blind, if not before, he's all in, has no choice. If it's a deuce 7, he's all in.
Yeah.
All right? That's the gentleman that won it.
Wow.
He doubled up. It's just, it was unbelievable. He went on a terror.
Is he going all in on every hand?
He did to start with, for a number of hands. Well, he had no choice. He didn't have enough not to.
Right.
So until he doubled up like 3 times, he couldn't even consider not going all in.
And is that a situation where other guys are at the table and they think, all right, I'll call you. It's not that much. I'll call you. Okay.
It's an ATC, any 2 cards. This guy is all in with 2 big blinds. I don't even have, if I'm the big blind, I don't even look at my cards.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guaranteeing no matter what, I am calling.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and then he won them.
Wow.
Hand after hand after hand. And he's a good player, don't get me wrong, but unbelievable strokes of luck there. Unbelievable run.
That's amazing.
And the winning, I think it was €2.1 million.
Which is?
Conversion rate over there is about 1.4.
Mm-hmm.
So you're looking at another about $2.9 million, $2.8 million.
Very nice.
Yeah, I think he was happy.
Now, you and I have talked about playing against young players over there because mm-hmm. the gambling age is 18. You're playing against even younger players.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some very, very good ones. In fact, when it got down to the final 2 tables, Annette, the gal that finished so well over in London, was still on the table. And I got to watch a few hands with her. I was actually commentating on PokerStars TV.
Oh, really?
On that. I did. And she played a couple of hands very well, I thought, on that. To give you an example of one. She's fairly short stacked. She's only got about 800,000 or so in front of her, so she's one of the short stacks that's left. She made a barely over a mid-raise out there on it.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm going to mess up some of the figures on this thing, but I think Andy's or the blinds were like 40,000 on it.
So 20 and 40?
20 and 40, so she makes it like an 85 bet,
mm-hmm.
you know, which you wonder about.
Yeah.
So you're thinking, okay, does she want to guarantee getting in it and seeing a flop? She doesn't want to limp because, again, the big blind at this time was the chip leader who had been very aggressive. I almost guarantee if you limp there, if he's got anything at all, I mean, even if he doesn't have anything, he's probably going to raise,
mm-hmm.
do a 3x raise. So my feeling was that she was trying to make sure she'd see a flop, either that or she had a monster and was trying to hide it, one of the two.
Okay.
Either one of which, the chip leader, unless he had a big hand, was probably just going to, you know, win. And that's what happened. She isolated. Everybody else folded. The big blind just smooth called her. They're in the pot. Pot's 180,000 with Andy's 190,000, something like that. Okay. Flop comes out there queen high with 3 spades.
Mm-hmm.
The chip leader checks, goes to her. She, again, bets about the same, like an $85,000 bet into a $190,000 pot.
Less than half the pot.
Less than half the pot. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. You're sitting there going, what the heck?
All right, now, if you're the chip leader at that point,
mm-hmm.
which you have been.
And this is true.
Okay, so you're the chip leader, and you're in that hand. What does that bet tell you?
Actually, I was online live at that time, and I can't see the whole cards or anything like that. And my comments on PokerStars TV there was, okay, this is one of 2 things. Either she has, like, the ace or the king of spades and wants to ensure seeing the turn cards, wants to make sure that she's going to see this, and she's afraid to just check right there. Or she's flopped a monster. You know, which one is it? Well, alarm bells are going off in my head.
Well, now, wait a second. If the big blind checked,
right.
If she just wants to see the next card,
yep.
she's going to check there also.
If she, well, for the next card, true, but if she just checks there, That guarantees he's going to bet on the next out.
I see. So
and the river's dead.
So she's betting there. So then on the next hand, if she misses the spade with her ace or her king,
right.
He's going to check to her, and then she can check. And so she's getting two cards
there you go.
For
exactly.
her bet.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's right. Kind of thinking beyond the next level.
Okay.
You know, instead of trying to see just one card, she's trying to see both cards by making that bet.
Okay.
All righty.
Does he call?
Actually, he pushed. He shoved in.
On the flop.
Was, on the flop.
Okay.
And she was somewhat short stacked, so, you know, I kind of question that. There's nothing wrong with it, but I kind of questioned it because if he makes just a mid-raise, you know, she's going to have to decide. She either pushes all in or folds right there, and you end up with the same result. If you're going to call anyhow, you might be able to make a decision, get a read off of her, do something that way. Nothing wrong with his move, though. Not second-guessing it.
He's reading her as weak because she made the min-raise pre-flop, and she
correct.
Didn't even bet half the pot
correct.
After the flop.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he shoves, assuming he can take it down. She insta-called, turned over two spades with a king. Second nuts, ends up doubling up on it.
Beautiful.
Oh, it was. It was very well played, very well done. She really didn't have any tells other than the amount she was playing.
Mm-hmm.
So her physical reaction to that, she controlled them very well. And she is a 20-year-old.
20.
She can't even go to Vegas legally and play.
Wow.
And playing this well and getting that deep in the tournament.
Nice.
Very, very nice.
Nice. All right, some stories from the EPT Grand Final in Monte Carlo from Dennis Phillips. Here with Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table. Let me tell you what's coming up on the show tonight. In just a moment, we'll introduce Nolan Dalla. He's the media director for the World Series of Poker and also did a recent interview with poker legend Amarillo Slim, who's come down with some tough times since being found guilty of a pretty bad crime about 5.5 years ago, 6 years ago. Anyway, Nolan will talk about that and the changes in the World Series of Poker, not just the main event, but some of the smaller events as well. And then later on, after we talk to Nolan, Dennis and Joe McGowan, the poker coach, will share with you some tips on how you should play if you're going to Vegas to play in the main event or any of the other events in the WSOP for the first time this year. So all of that is ahead here at the Lumiere Place Final Table. And welcome aboard to one of our new sponsors. That's American Image Salon and Spa. And this is a perfect time for them to come on board for the show because Mother's Day is this Sunday.
Absolutely.
And these guys can do such a great thing for your mom. If you've never sent your mom to a salon and spa, they have an offer now of something called the Head-to-Toe Spa Package. It's $125. It's a facial and an express pedicure, and a mini Aveda hand and foot release. And if you tell them that Dennis and Paul from the Final Table sent you, they will knock $25 off that. So here's a $100 gift to make your mom feel like she just want to sit and go.
There you go. Absolutely.
Here's the phone number, 314-878-5210. That's 878-5210. It's American Image Salon and Spa. They're in Chesterfield, and you can also find them online at AmericanImageSalon.com. It's the head-to-toe Mother's Day Spa Package, $100, a discount from $125 to $100 just by mentioning Dennis and Paul from the Lumiere Place Final Table. It's American Image Salon and Spa, where they're making a difference one image at a time. We'll be right back.
In just 2 short years, World Series of Poker champ Dennis Phillips has earned over $4.5 million because Dennis knows when to hold a great deal. That's why Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room is his game room superstore. Hurry to Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room now for factory closeout deals on poker tables, craps tables, blackjack tables, 3-in-1 casino tables, and accessories. Plus, get Amini's closeout deals on complete game room packages, sale priced from just $1,995. Right now, Brunswick Billiard Game Room Suites are thousands off, and American-made pool tables are just $995. Hurry to Amini's now for blowout deals on leather sectionals, area rugs, bars, bar stools, video arcade games, and home theater seating. Hold your deal interest-free with 2-year layaway. So take a tip from Dennis. Get your great deal today at Amini's Home Rugs and Game Room, Highway 40 and Boone's Crossing in Chesterfield Valley, the home of the Copper Dome Amini's.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Happy to be with you from downtown St. Louis, where a little bit later on, Dennis and I will jump onto one of the Lumiere Place high-stakes tables here, play a little 5-10 No Limit, one of our favorite games in town. And they've also got 1-3 going on here and a tournament 5 nights a week at 6 o'clock and 7 days a week at noon. If you're looking to play poker, this is a great place to do it, the Lumiere Place Poker Room in downtown St. Louis. This portion of the show is brought to you by another new sponsor, Shomi's Restaurant.
Shomi's Restaurants and Franchise. Now, I don't know if anybody else has been. I've been to this restaurant, and I love this restaurant, and they're located all around. They got the gals there in the nice, cute little pink outfits, and they got the wings that are to die for. Mm. Love those things. But the thing that I didn't even realize that they had this many locations. I've been doing over there in Illinois and the one that's downtown here. They've got a location in Fairview Heights right across from the St. Clair Mall. They've got one out in St. Charles just off of Zumel Road in I-70. O'Fallon, Missouri, on Highway K, just behind that Fritz Frozen Custard. They have the one down here on the landing.
Yep.
It's right across the street from our poker room. Mm-hmm. We can walk there right now very easily. And then the South County location, which is Old Woody's off of Lee May Ferry Road. And I didn't know this, too, but Show Me Restaurants is now expanding and franchising. So if you've been looking at a place to call your own, something that sounds like it, that you really, really want an opportunity to put something together, this is it. You can call Ron Cote, and that's at 618-444-4447. 618-444-4447. And according to Ron, you can buy one, or if your vision is good enough, you can buy an entire state.
Mm-hmm.
They're going to try to franchise and go coast to coast with this. And if their service and their food and their waitresses can match it elsewhere,
yeah,
this could be a gold mine. It absolutely could. Anyhow, Shomi's. Go there for the wings. Go there for the entertainment. Go there for the atmosphere. And find me there.
Welcome aboard, Shomi's. We're proud to have you as a sponsor of the Lumiere Place Final Table. And now let's introduce our guest for tonight, Nolan Dalla, who is the media director for the World Series of Poker. You also find him writing for online publications and print publications as well. Here's a guy who knows poker and is right in the heart of it. Hi, Nolan. Welcome to the Lumiere Place Final Table.
Hey, thank you very much. It's nice to be with you, Paul, and Dennis, and you guys have already hooked me in. I'm ready to invest in the Shoney's, and I'm ready to take up that spa package.
Good. I'm glad to hear it. Before we talk about Amarillo Slim and your interview from last month, let's talk a little bit about the World Series of Poker, which starts 3 weeks from tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've got some major changes going on out there. Let's start with the 40K. I just got back from the EPT in Monaco over there, and that was one of the buzzwords that was going on. Everybody's talking about this 40K and how many people are going to be in it and how tough the competition's going to be. I think you guys might have hit a home run with this one. Can you kind of fill me in on how you came up with it and all?
Yeah, sure, Dennis. It remains to be seen, obviously. And the one thing about the World Series is, I really do believe that if you look at this menu, there's 57 gold bracelet events this year. There really is something for everyone. We have that opening weekend, which I think is just going to be an absolute smash with the $1,000 buy-in, what's called a stimulus special. So, somebody can win a gold bracelet for investing $1,000, and the prize pool is going to be gargantuan on that event. And then at the other end of the spectrum, the same opening week, we have, as you said, the $40,000 buy-in No Limit Hold'em event, which I guess is on par with the $50,000 horse in terms of its prestige, and it's going to attract a world-class field. There's no question about that. ESPN will be there to cover it. So, again, we've got really both sides of the spectrum covered and everything in between.
How many do you think will be in that $1,000 stimulus special tournament on that first Saturday?
Yeah, Paul, I was on the phone with Jack Effel, the World Series of Poker tournament director, and he mentioned that, of course, we have registrations online. Anyone out there listening can go, if they don't want to, come in and stand in line, they can go online and register in advance. And that's at the World Series of Poker website, which is www.worldseriesofpoker.com. But what I've been told is we already have over 1,000 people registered online, which, may not sound like a lot, but if you think we're 3.5 weeks out, we already have 1,000 signed up. I'm hearing estimates of 5,000 to 6,000 people are expected for that event. So that's going to be an enormous prize pool. We may have, if you add up the figures, I guess, you know, $500,000-$600,000 for first, somewhere in there at least.
Oh, absolutely. And you just stop and think. I know poker players. They procrastinate as well as anybody in the world.
Oh, yeah.
If you've got 1,000 people there already, you're going to have a monstrous tournament there.
There
probably
will be a big line on that Saturday at the Rio, people who are trying to get into this thing.
An hour after it starts, there'll be a lineup of people still trying to get into it.
Absolutely. And what about the 40K event? How many big buy-in guys do you expect to have in that?
Well, it's very difficult to predict that. You know, we've had between 140, 150 or so for a similar, you know, buy-in horse event the last two or three years. I think it's fair to expect somewhere, you know, certainly above that, because Hold'em, of course, is the game now. So I've heard estimates of, you know, don't hold me to this, but certainly more than the 150. I've heard it could go as high as 250 or 300. You know, that's, you know, again, think about how much money people are investing there, $40,000 on the first week. So, that's going to be an enormous prize pool. But bigger than the money is the prestige associated with that event. Whoever
Absolutely.
Wins that is going to have some incredible bragging rights.
Well, you've got a special bracelet for that one, right? Different
yeah,
from
that's
the
true. There
them?
Is a special bracelet. Like the horse event, there was, I think, platinum and diamonds and, you know, all kinds of goodies involved in that one. I believe the bracelet here is also very special.
I think it's a gold one or something different from the others.
And I know you're doing it for the 40th anniversary of the WSOP. Does that mean that next year there'll be a 41K event?
Yeah, you know, well, that's, we've been asked that, and this is what I really like about who I work with and for nowadays. If you don't know, I am really the last holdout from the old days of Binion's Horseshoe, because I'm really the last survivor from the old days, and I'm very fortunate that Harrah's, you know, has kept me on all these years. And one of the things I really like about Harrah's is they're willing to try new things. They're willing to, you know, experiment with, you know, a $40,000 buy-in event, a $50,000 horse. You know, does everything work? Does everything succeed? Well, no, not really. But a lot of it does. And I think that what you'll see is, if you see a big turnout, you see a great public response to the ESPN show, the $40,000 horse, of course you could see, No Limit Hold'em, you could certainly see next year the 41st anniversary of $41,000, of $42,000. It's certainly possible. But again, what I think the thing that needs to be kept in mind here is the World Series is a work in progress. It's always changing. It's maturing. It's evolving. And the public, meaning the poker players out there listening, we listen to everything that people say. And if they have an idea, bring it to us, and it'll certainly be considered.
Well, again, when I was over there, Monte Carlo, some of the team pro players, we had a little mini meeting there. And, I mean, there was Daniel and Barry and Chris was there, and Greg Raymer and that. We were talking about this event some, and the majority of these guys are going to be playing it. The one thing we didn't know for sure was what the structure was going to be and what your starting chips. I mean, you're going to make it, you know, I mean, 3X on that would be 120,000 starting chips.
Are you doing triple chips?
All the events are triple the buy-in, and I must admit that I haven't looked at the structures. I believe they will be coming out very soon. If they're not online yet, they're going to be, for all the events, they will be accessible to everyone who's listening. If you go to the website and click on, you know, the link there with each event. So I got to admit, I don't have the structure sheet in front of me, but I think that we can fairly say that at the World Series you get more play than any other tournament in the world. And,
absolutely.
Obviously if you get more hands and more play and more chips, you know, the cream rises to the top. And I think that, Dennis, you saw that happen last year, certainly. Paul, I assume you follow all this, and you saw last year that, you know, the cream really did rise to the top, and I hope that we can continue that trend.
Well, I played two of the high rollers so far down in the Bahamas, and I finished 12th, and I played in London, and I finished 10th. I need to make a final table on this. So I'm getting so close.
Nolan, you mentioned the ESPN coverage. I understand that this year it's going to be Hold'em and nothing else. No seven-card stud, no PLO, no horse. Is that true?
Well, it's true in the sense of there are going to be four tournaments featured. They are all No Limit Hold'em tournaments, but keep in mind that ESPN is a continual presence there. They do have cameras rolling, and let me just hypothetically say, let's say Phil Hellmuth or Doyle Brunson or Johnny Chan were to win that next gold bracelet, or we were to set history in some other way, shape, or form, you can be sure that ESPN will be there to capture it. If it's Omaha stud, it doesn't matter. You know, again, everyone's there to capture I should say ESPN's there to capture history being made. And our partner Bluff Media will also be there, and it's going to be broadcast, I believe, on the Internet, I think 20 or 25 events, somewhere in that range also. So people will be able to watch the World Series of Poker in the comfort of their own homes, on their home computers, and then also later on ESPN. So, and there's a lot more than just Hold'em when you look at the totality of the menu.
But ESPN is going to show mostly main event and the big events, and that coverage won't include anything but Hold'em, correct?
Yeah, that is correct. Now, I've been told that by ESPN that the number of hours is the same. So I've read some at some websites that they've really misreported this, in the sense that, you know, is ESPN cutting back its poker coverage or reducing? Well, that's simply not true, because if you look at the number of hours they're planning to cover and then later broadcast, you know, I can't speak for ESPN specifically, but my understanding is there will be just as many hours shot. But you're quite right, Paul. It is No Limit Hold'em. You know, this is poker is a business in the sense that we are responsive to what the public wants, and they want Hold'em. They want to watch Hold'em. I think that we could probably all agree, as very serious poker players, we like to play different games and watch different games and so forth. But as of right now, it's going to be Hold'em, and then we'll see what happens next year.
Well, I think you're exactly right. We're in the minority. We know how to play a Raz game, an Omaha game, or whatever it happens to be. The majority of people, everybody can learn the basics of the No Limit Hold'em, and they understand it, and they feel more comfortable with it. So if you're going to reach a wider audience, that's the game you want to do. Now, the other thing I was wondering about now, before we start talking about the legends there on it. Let's get to the legends then, because that's the third event that we were going to be covered out there besides the Antioch for Africa.
Yeah, you're doing a Champions Invitational with how many of the previous WSOP main event champions are still alive?
Don't quote me on the number. I think 24. I had the list here, and I didn't actually count it up, but 24 would be eligible. And, how many of those will show? I think most of them. I mean, there are a few that are older and may not, you know, be able to make it. But I think for the most you're going to see an incredible field.
Nolan, you think Russ Hamilton dares show his face there?
I can't speak for Russ. I do know that, he is a world champion, and I believe will be issued an invitation. But, you know, I can't speak for Russ and that whole situation. On behalf of poker, I think that the main thing that we do at the World Series of Poker in Harrah's is to, you know, if someone is a world champion, they will be invited, and then it's up to them to, to accept or decline the invitation. But let me say this about the event itself. It's going to be an incredible, talk about making history. Jack Binion will be there. It will be called the Binion Cup, the actual trophy. I mean, this reminds me of the Lombardi Trophy in the NFL. I mean, we're naming the trophy after the patriarch of the World Series of Poker. And then I don't know if it's been, it's been rumored, and I'm not sure it's been publicly announced, but, a 1970 Corvette is probably going to be the prize, I believe, for the champion. And, of course, 1970 being the inaugural year of the World Series of Poker. It'd be pretty cool to drive that car around town. Don't you agree, Dennis?
Very, very such. Yeah. I watched a lot of Lamborghinis and Ferraris and all this other over there. To me, that's more my car.
The 70 Corvette.
Oh, my gosh, yeah. I'd much rather have that.
Nolan, you had a piece last month on PokerListings.com where you interviewed Amarillo Slim, who goes back to the days of Binion's Horseshoe just like you do. I don't know if he's going to be out there. I've seen Amarillo Slim a few times when I've been out in Vegas at the Wynn or at the Venetian, and he sits down and plays and tells stories. But one of the stories that he had been, I guess, very reluctant to talk about was being indicted by a grand jury back in 2003 of multiple counts of indecency with a child. And you sat down and talked to him, and he was very frank in that conversation about what happened and how he got in trouble. I don't want to dwell on this all that long, but give our listeners just a quick little summary of what Slim had to say to you.
Yeah, sure. The overview, and anyone who wants to see the details and read really Slim's own words on his reaction to, I think, some pretty tough questions about, what really happened, can go to PokerListings.com. I'll repeat that. It's pokerlistings.com, and simply look at under my name or Amarillo Slim, and they can read that interview. But basically, Amarillo Slim's and I don't take a position here. I'm wearing my journalist hat here in the sense that I just ask the questions, and I try to get an honest answer from a guy who's been very cagey all of his life. Let's be quite honest. I knew that going in, and I thought at the very least Slim deserved. He's turned 80 years old now. I think we can honestly say he's not going to be around that much longer. I think that this is obviously a stain on his reputation, and he deserves his opportunity to face the court of public opinion, and that's what he did. So I sat down with him. We talked for about 3 hours, and he essentially said that he didn't want to go through a trial and subject his family and his granddaughter to a lot of not only cross examination and potential embarrassment, but also a public scrutiny, because this most certainly would have been a circus atmosphere on a trial in Amarillo. And you could say, well, why did he plead guilty, and should he have fought it? And I think most of us, if we were accused of a crime falsely, we would fight it. Well, Slim made up his mind, rightly or wrongly, to just plead basically to a lesser charge, pay a small fine, and the case was dismissed. So. It's certainly an interesting case. It's not a pleasurable subject to discuss or read about. But again, I felt a responsibility as someone who really covets the history of this game to try to get the answers as best we can.
I thought the interview was fascinating, and you have the transcript of most of it there on that website, pokerlistings.com. You talk a little bit in the interview about him being a pariah in the poker community because of that. Now it's 5.5, almost 6 years later. Have these guys who kind of turned their backs on him at the time, are they re-embracing him? Has his image been refined at all after being looked at as a really bad guy?
Well, I don't think that we really know the answer to that yet. And a case like this, which, let's face it, child molestation and something like that's I one of the columnists out here in Las Vegas, he said, that's worse than bank robbery. It may be worse than murder. I know I'm not trying to diminish those other horrible crimes, but if you think about, the worst thing in the world to be charged with, that's probably it.
Yeah.
And so I think that a rehabilitation of his image or of his character is not something that happens overnight. We don't snap our fingers and write one column or one interview or one interview or article, and all of a sudden his reputation is rehabilitated in an instant. That doesn't happen. It takes time. Healing, trust, those kind of things do take time, and I think Slim understands that. But this is the first step towards, him trying to rehabilitate, I think, his image, and we'll see in the long run if that is effective or not.
Do you think he'll play in the Champions event?
I'm almost certain he will. He's, of course, the oldest surviving World Series of Poker champion. Then Doyle would be next. They're both, I think, it's, like I said, Slim is 80, 81, and Doyle is in his mid-70s. So I do believe Slim will play. Now, obviously, somebody that age, you don't know what their health will be like tomorrow or next week. But I do expect to see him at the World Series of Poker, yes.
Okay. Well, let's wrap this up. Let's go to a little higher note real quick and then go. Just real briefly, do you see any changes in the future, like they made the changes this year? Anything you can briefly touch upon for next year, 5 years? I mean, you're a historian of the game, obviously. You're probably in a better position than anybody else. Can you see where this game's going in the next few years, or any changes in the World Series of Poker? Anything come to mind?
Yeah, I think the Dennis, the thing that you will agree with is that this game has become truly the World Series of Poker. It's, back 25, 30, 40 years ago, it was mostly Texans and Southerners, and then it gradually became a little bigger and a little broader, and then we invited some Irishmen and some Brits over, and in the 80s, and eventually this has become quite a spectacle, from attracting people from all walks of life and all nationalities. We had 124 nations represented at the World Series of Poker last year. That would be unthinkable a decade ago. So I think that that's the trend that you're going to see, is the continued expansion of poker overseas. You say you're over in Europe, you just came back. You see what's going on over there. Poker's maybe hotter in Europe and certainly hotter in Russia right now than maybe any place else in the world. So if you look at Asia and South America and other countries, that's where it's really going to get big. And the World Series of Poker, I think, will benefit from the globalization of the game.
Well, Nolan, we really appreciate your time today. We look forward to being out there for the 40th annual World Series of Poker. Dennis and I will both be there. We'll hopefully run into you and set up more stuff as the series goes along. By the way, will you be playing this year?
Well, you know, I do not play, and I guess in a sense that's a very good thing because you know the volatility of tournament poker. I'm one of the two guys, except for the winners, that's going to walk out of there with some money, hopefully. So at least if I stay out of the sports book. So.
All righty.
Thanks, Nolan, for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Nolan. Appreciate it.
You guys have a great show. Thanks for having me on.
All right.
Thank you.
Take care.
Nolan Dalla joining us here at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com. When we come back, Dennis and Joe McGowan, the poker coach, will give you some tips on playing in the World Series of Poker from the main event right on down to the 1K stimulus special. This portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.
Yes, PokerStars. That's a site I play on, guys. And I'm telling you, the things on PokerStars that are happening are just unbelievable right now. They are going to be awarding not dozens, hundreds and hundreds of seats to the main event out there. You guys, if you whatever kind of game you want to play, again, if you feel comfortable with the Texas Hold'em, the No Limit, and play that, that's great. But if you want to expand, if you want to play these other games that we were talking about in the interview, a Raz game, an Omaha, whatever, that's where you go to learn. That's where you go to become proficient at it. You can play at all levels from a 1 cent smaller levels and everything on that all the way up to the big levels. Whatever you want to do, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, live games, tournament games, whatever you want to do. Go on there, learn it, then come on down here to the Lumiere Place and visit us.
And by the way, when Dennis says that's where he plays, you can actually play against him, as
yep.
you can the other members of Team PokerStars Pro. And by the way, our friend Vanessa Russo, who was on with us a couple of months ago, she won the 25K or 25,000 euro high roller event.
I was there when she won it. I was 5 feet from her.
Were you?
She won it, yes.
79 people in that, and Vanessa won it. So congratulations
yes.
to her.
Very, very much so.
Happy to have her as part of the show. And Dennis, of course, a member of Team Poker Stars Pro. We're back with more of the Lumiere Place Final Table right after this.
Closet cleaning is a worthwhile venture, clearing up usable space and resulting in items for charitable donation, like that keyboard tie. It's a win-win, but it takes a lot of energy. You should clean your closet next week and fuel up this week. For instance, carb up on the delicious pasta dishes at the House of Savoy, or meet your daily recommended dose of random cravings at the Kitchen Buffet and Bistro. To recap, eat now, clean your closet later. Now is the time for whatever turns you on at Lumiere Place. Visit LumierePlace.com for more info. Must be 21 to enter casino. Gambling problem? Call 1-888-BETS-OFF.
Put on your sunglasses, stack up your chips, and hide those tails.
Yes, he's going all in, and Chan has him. Johnny Chan, the master.
You're at the Lumiere Place Final Table with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
We are live in downtown St. Louis and also online on Rounders Radio. And our podcasts are available on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. And if you've got questions about anything we talk about or a hand you'd like us to talk about, probably before the end of the month we'll do another listener questions show with nothing
yep.
but emails and phone calls. You can send those emails to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. But now it's time to bring in the poker coach, Joe McGowan. Hi, Joe.
Hey, Paul. Hey, Dennis. How are you guys doing today?
Doing pretty good, Joe. How are you doing? How's the
great,
little one?
Good show so far.
Right, thank you.
Thank you very much. One of the things that I wanted you guys to talk about, since you have both had nice deep runs in the main event, Dennis, of course, making it all the way to third last year, but Joe has had some terrific tournament success in other events recently, is with 3 weeks to go, we've got a lot of listeners who might be going to Las Vegas for the first time to play in the World Series of Poker. Maybe they won't be playing in the main event, but some of the smaller buy-in events. And I'm wondering if you have any advice for them. And, Joe, we'll start a little bit with you, and then Dennis will chime in.
Okay, sure. Well, I think if any of the listeners are going to go and play in some of the smaller events, you know, I was really happy to hear Nolan say that it was going to be triple chips this year. That was correct, right?
Yes, mm-hmm. yes.
That previous years it's been double. Because in the past, the most popular events were the $1,500 events.
Right, and they did. They did expand.
Like
this year there's going to be
players or so.
Right, they did, and but you only started with a 2x of your starting your buy-in. So if the 1500, you're starting with 3,000 chips. Basically, you're in trouble there if you miss one hand almost. With your
well,
very
really,
valuable points.
You know, Sorry, I'm having a little trouble hearing you guys today.
Okay.
Sorry. I think that what would happen, Dennis, very commonly, you know, a normal tournament that, like a main event, something that you know, a big structure, lots and lots of chips, you're sitting very, very deep relative to the starting blinds. You know, you can sit back, you can kind of get the reads on the players, you can wait a couple levels and just play top 10 hands and feel out who's the bully and who can you push around and who can you bluff and pick up some tells, pick up some reads, and kind of start to play midway through the day and certainly play hands as need be as they come early, but just kind of be a little cautious. That's a general strategy of a lot of players. And other players come in, you know, guns a-blazing right off the bat. But in the smaller events, you really can't do that. You know, with the years, last couple years, with just twice the chips, by the third level, blinds are 100, 200, which doesn't sound like much. But when you start with 3,000 in chips, you know, if someone limps in, and now you're going to raise to 800, one person calls and the limper calls, now you got, you know, $2,400 in the pot. You have ace-king suited. You miss the flop, comes 10 high. They check to you. You know, do you do a continuation bet for 1,600, 1,800, 2,000? Do you go all in? I mean, you do a continuation bet, you're pretty much, you know, you're not necessarily committed to the hand, but, I mean, you're done if you lose that pot. And that's one hand. So I think for our listeners, Paul and Dennis, and I think Dennis should agree with what you already said, you know, I think you actually don't want to sit back and wait. I think you really don't have time to be as patient as some of the deeper stacked events, and I'm very glad that they are going to triple chips. But even with the triple chips, by the time it gets to about the fourth level, which comes quick, I think you're better off actually gambling early, because many times early people will fold an ace-queen and think nothing of it. But by the fourth level, that guy that's most people are short, you know, you're dying to get ace-jack to go all in. So it's really an interesting thing.
I agree with Joe 100% on this. I would even go a little further in those first rounds or two, really try to play your position, really try and get a quick read on the players and which ones you can push around a little bit. It may not sound like much, but stealing those blinds, building it up to, if you're starting with 4,500, you get up to 6,000, 6,500, will make a difference. It's going to enable you to make maybe a continuation bet there and still survive.
But let me ask you a little bit about the difference in the length of the rounds, not just the amount of chips you have, but most people who play in casino tournaments where there's a small buy-in, they may be buying in for $30, $50, maybe $100, $150, whatever it is. Most of those tournaments are going to have rounds that are 15 minutes, 20 minutes, maybe 30 minutes. You rarely find them longer than that. Here now they sit down in a $1,500 event or higher at the World Series of Poker, and the rounds are 1 hour before the blinds go up. And, of course, in the main event, it's 2 hours. But in those smaller events where you have an hour, doesn't that give you a little bit more room to kind of sit back and assess the situation, because you're not going to get blinded off so quickly? And by the time you get to that third or fourth round, you've already been playing for 3 or 4 hours?
Well, I don't think so. I think, you know, you really don't have much time. And I think you either need to gamble early or gamble late, because, you know, with this $1,000 event that they're talking about coming up, although I'm sure I'm going to play in it, I'm going to look forward to playing it, and I think it's a fantastic event, it's just you need to kind of choose, you know, what you're going to do. And you're going to see if there's 5,000 people on that. I don't know if that's going to be a three-day event or other. It's going to be a two-day event.
Four-day event.
Four-day event. You know, I would almost take a prop bet with somebody. I might lose this one, but after 11 hours of play, you know, the number of people that are left, I think it's going to be shocking to the average listener. It's not going to be nearly, you know, what you think. It's, you know, in the big events, the 25K events, the 40K events, the $10,000 events, you know, after a full day one, sometimes the big ones don't lose many players at all because people sit so, so deep. You know, it's hard to get stacked unless it's just, you know, a massive, crazy cooler. In these events, smaller events, Paul, which are great events and the most popular events, you know, you can't sit around and wait. You just can't. You can't afford to. Before long, you know, even if you lose just 1,000 in chips and blinds and antes and a couple of, you know, flops that you miss, you're going to be short by, you know, within 4 hours. That's just my feel, and that's my experience in the last 2-3 years of playing a fair amount of those. You either gamble early or gamble late, because if you sit around and wait for cards and wait for big pairs, you know, they very rarely come, and even when you do, you may not get action. So I think if you're ever going to be aggressive, it's in the smaller events, and you're better off being aggressive early when people will still fold a hand. People will lay down early, but they're not going to lay down pocket fours. You know, come the fifth level when they're short, just like you. You know, they're not going to lay down ace jack. They're going to call you.
Heck, they're not going to lay down 6-8 of hearts. So you know, let's be truthful about it.
Yeah. You know what? That brings us to the question of hand ranges, which we'll get to in the next segment here. With Dennis Phillips and Joe, the poker coach McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. This is the Lumi Airplace Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. This portion of the show brought to you by the Poker Players Alliance, a group of people fighting for poker players just like you. Whether you play online or offline, in casinos or in home games, the PPA is a nonprofit membership organization full of poker players from around the United States who've joined together to speak with one voice to promote the game we all love. They do it in state legislatures. They're fighting it in Kentucky. They're fighting it in Washington State. They're fighting it all over this country. Not only that, they're fighting it in courtrooms and even at the federal government, where they're lobbying people like Barney Frank to please introduce legislation to get rid of the UIGEA. But they can't do it without members like you. Go to ppa.org to find out more about the Poker Players Alliance. That's ppa.org. We're back with more of the Lumi Airplay's Final Table right after this.
If you wear gloves at work, you've got to know the Glove Guy. 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com. The Glove Guy is Bill Hyatt, who sells gloves all over the country from his base right here in St. Louis. The Glove Guy has over 400 different styles of gloves and safety wear available to you. Brown jersey gloves, PVC dotted gloves, single leather palm gloves, Kevlar gloves, leather driver gloves, and more chemical-resistant gloves, latex gloves, vinyl gloves, string knit gloves, palm-coated gloves, and he carries mechanics gloves, too. Don't buy your gloves one pair at a time. The Glove Guy sells gloves by the dozen and by the case. See everything the Glove Guy sells on his website, glovesforyou.com. That's gloves, the number 4YOU.com. If you don't see it there, the Glove Guy can help you find it. That's the Glove Guy, Bill Hyatt, 314-509-5241 or glovesforyou.com.
Before they sit down to play tonight, they're talking poker with you right now. Live from Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel in downtown St. Louis, here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Thanks again to the people who make this possible, our sponsors, including the new ones, The Glove Guy and American Image Spa and Salon and Show Me's Restaurant, and, of course, our friends at Poker Stars and the PPA and Amini's, and right down here at Lumiere Place Casino and Hotel.
Absolutely.
We're in the poker room here on Tuesday nights doing the show live from 7 to 8. If you ever miss it, you can catch the podcasts on thechipleader.com. I'm Paul Harris with World Series of Poker main event finalist Dennis Phillips and Joe McGowan, the poker coach. And we're talking about tips on how to play when you go to the World Series of Poker this year. And it starts in just 3 weeks. In the last segment, we were talking about how to play some of the strategies in the early event, early parts of the event, particularly at the lower levels like the $1K or the $1,500 buy-ins. And Joe was advocating that you be aggressive early on. And Dennis was joking about playing things like a 6-8 suited and things like that. So I'll start with you this time, Dennis. Talk to me a little bit about the kind of hand ranges that you want to play early on in a tournament. If you're going to be aggressive and try to take control of a table and try to get a big stack early on, does that mean you want to play different kinds of hands if you can't wait for the big ones like Joe says?
Absolutely. I want to qualify this first. It's my opinion, it's your opinion, it's Joe's opinion. The one thing you have to do is feel comfortable when you're playing out there at the World Series. And if you feel comfortable being super aggressive and going in, or if you feel very comfortable sitting tight in that, try to play your game. We just try to give you what our opinion is of it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, take it, leave it, agree with it, disagree with it. I really don't care about that. We're just having a nice, frank discussion here of what we think is the best way to do it. And if it can help you guys out, that's great. Going along with what Joe was saying, I do expand on a tournament like this. I will expand my starting range quite a bit. Well, the one hand that we talked about last week out at Monte Carlo on that was fairly early in the tournament. It was a deeper tournament. It was an ace-five of spades under the gun, and I opened with it on a 3X. Again, because then people can't put you on those type of hands.
You're raising with that hand early on.
Right.
Would you do that if you were playing one of these lower limit tournaments? You know, you buy in for 1,000 or 1,500, so you got 3,000 or 4,500 in chips. Now the blinds are up to 1 and 200. Are you going to make it 600 under the gun with an ace-five of spades?
Well, here's what it is, and these are things you do later in a bigger tournament, but you can do them early here. Use your position well. If you're next to the button or two away from it or something like that, and you look down and you do have I joked with the 6-8 of hearts, but a 6-8 of hearts. And you make a 3X raise on this thing, on that, right? A flop comes out there 9 high, maybe totally misses you. You know, 2 clubs, a spade, no pair, maybe a gut shot's the best thing you have. But everybody checks to you again, okay? You're going to assume nobody's hit that flop.
Mm-hmm.
You make the continuation bet here, there's a very, very good chance you're going to take that pot down.
Mm-hmm.
Now, so, you know, be able to play it, play your position strong if you can do this. And I will start with a lot of very questionable hands in late position.
Is that the kind of aggression you're talking about, Joe, taking advantage of the fact from late position that it's very hard to hit a flop?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, picking up with what Dennis said, you know, if the flop comes 9 high and you have 6-8 and they all check it to you, you know, I think that is a good spot to do a continuation bet, of course, depending upon your image and depending upon their image and everyone's chips and all that, and you're taking all that into account. But when you do the continuation bet, if you get one caller, now your reading ability comes in. How did he call? What did
he absolutely
look like? You know, I have a gut shot. Okay, I missed it. The turn card came. I didn't hit. But he barely called me, and he was worried about the guy to his left if he was going to call. I think he was calling me with second big bet here. You know, I can hit the miracle if I'm wrong. I can hit my gut shot, but I'm making this bet obviously not for value as a bluff, semi-bluff, to get this guy to fold, and you can pick up that pot. You know, to win tournaments and to go deep, you have to be able to earn some pots you have no business earning and not showing your cards. And that's a big key. You know, whenever you're
not showing your cards.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, roll over your cards, you know, you can get unlucky, like Dennis in the last turn.
Sure.
You know, the guy hits a 2-outer on the river.
Yeah, it happens, absolutely. But I love being able to take down pots and never showing a hand. And I hate being at a table where somebody wins 6, 8, 10 hands over the course of several hours, and you've never once seen their hands.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have questionable, you think you're reading them, you think this may be a tell. You have no way of knowing for sure on that.
Let me ask you about the concept of average chips, because if you play in a big tournament, they always have the display on the video screen there that tells you how many people were in it. Sometimes it lists what the payouts are for the top 30 places or 130 places or 666 places like last year in the main event. But it also has a list of how many players are left and what the average chips are. How important is it, particularly in a smaller buy-in event, for you to keep comparing your stack to what it says on that screen?
Well, if you're talking to me, I think it's hugely. And yeah, there's so many other advantages you can take care of if you know where you're at on your chip, average chip, you know, what everybody else has got, where you're at in position of it. And it's easy to do. If you start out with 3,000 chips and 1,000 people in it, when you get down to 500, what's the average chip count? 6,000. Very simple mathematics. You can keep in your head at all times, and you know where you are in relationship to it. Usually when you get into fairly deep into a tournament, there's a 60-40 rule. You take the average of it, and you figure 40% are above it and 60% are below it. So that, again, gives you an idea of where you're at in relationship to everybody, where you're at in relationship to the payoff on the money, the whole bit like that. And not only keeping track of the average chip, but keeping track of the amount of chips each player has in front of him can be so huge on this. And Joe, I've seen you're a master at this sometimes. But say a guy's getting very short stack, he's on the big blind, you're sure he's going to shove with almost any two cards, and you look down there at it, and he's got enough that if he shoves, you can come back over the top again to isolate. So you sit there with a big pair in early position, you limp.
Mm-hmm.
Let him do his, let a couple other people limp. You come back over the top massively with your queens or something and take the blooming pot down for everybody except him and isolate. You know, if you're unaware of his chip count, you can't do that. So chip count,
I think
position,
chip count,
average
chip count at the table is far more beneficial than what the average chips are. You know, certainly if there's like 500 people left. I think that you always want to know what the average chips are. You always want to know what the structure is going to be. You want to know what the break order is of the tables. You know, is your table going to break next and you're doing all this work on tells and reads and it's going to break in 20 minutes? Or are you at one of the final spots where it's not going to break until 2 days? You know, stuff like that is really, really important as well. But I think, you know, people start to panic a little bit, Paul. I think people, you know, when they say, oh, I'm average chips, or I'm now 10 big blinds, you know, I got to look for a spot to push all in. I think, you know, all you can do is make the best decision at that time, and I don't think you want to feel pressured by your chips as much. I think people overdo it a little bit. You know, I love hearing that the guy that was short stacked, you know, had two big blinds earlier in the show and came back and won it. You know, Phil Hellmuth talks all the time about coming back and being able to make a great comeback. I haven't really won anything yet. I've gone deep in a few here and there, but you know, I've had success playing short and being able to survive much further than I think I would have if I would have gotten a little impatient and felt pressured to push all in with my ace 9 or ace 10 because I fell short and I could wait for a little bit better spot. Or actually find a spot where you can bluff being short and pick up some chips. I think a real
Joe, I'm going to interrupt you there because next week I want us to come back a little bit and talk a little bit more, particularly about middle of the tournament play as opposed to beginning of the tournament play, and maybe even some late tournament play we can get into over the course of the next couple of weeks. But before we go, I have to share one hand with you. Go ahead.
One quick thing here, too, though. If you guys got any questions or comments about our strategy here, send us some emails. I'd love to get some discussion going on this. Agree, disagree, come up with a different angle. Let us know. Let's get this going.
DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com.
We'd love to hear
from you. Now, here's an email from a listener named Mike Flowers, and I've held on to this for a couple of months because I wanted to hit you guys with it, and I haven't told either of you ahead of time about this.
Beware, Joe. Okay. Here it comes.
I was in a hand recently that went like this. It's a 1-2 no-limit cash game. I raised $24 and got three callers. What I had or they had really doesn't matter, but to make a long hand short, by the river we had around $3,000 in the pot, and I moved all in on the river. I was pretty sure I did not have the best hand, and I did not have a pair or a good high card. I had Jack-8. The player to my left folded. The other guy, to my amazement, had fallen asleep. Someone at the table said he had some sort of sleeping disorder.
What the heck?
The dealer asked me what I wanted to do, so I asked for a clock. I sweated out the minute before they killed his hand, and I won the pot. I had told all the other players if they shut up, I would give them $20 each. Before they killed his hand, they looked at it. He had two pair. Then we woke him up and told him what happened. He was not a happy camper, and he went off on a tirade you would not believe. I told him, that's poker. What can you do? My question is, did I do the right thing within the confines of the rules of poker?
Depends on how big this dude is.
Yeah. That story, you know, it makes you think, like, okay, was this like a prank email and a joke? I mean, it probably wasn't, because some crazy stuff actually happens at the poker table. And I have a guy that's a regular in my game that's actually won a couple bracelets that's a little older now and sometimes does fall asleep at the table. And I always joke with him he's going to wake up to a hand, blah, 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 and it's not that funny. But I think really the floor, you know, Paul, probably made a bad decision, in my opinion.
Yeah,
I think you see,
they did.
You see a player sleeping, you don't just do the clock on him like that.
No, that's ridiculous.
I think the floor should have said, you know, Tom, you know, it's on you. You have 1 minute to act on your hand. I mean, I think that's pretty horrible that they would actually do that. How much money got in there? And where
the Jack 8 also, how this guy in for $3,000?
I don't know. All right, we're all out of time.
I agree, though, with Joe on this.
We're back
decision.
Next Tuesday night at 7 on KFNS and KFNS.com and RoundersRadio.com.
Oh,
and we're,
I want to play there. Where is this place?
Don't forget Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. Joe, the poker coach McGowan, Dennis Phillips, and Paul Harris at the Lumiere Place Final Table. We'll see you next week.